I'm Ashley.
And I'm Brooke.
And you're here with us on A Teachers Who Talk Crime
Podcast.
Hey, y'all.
Hey.
What's up?
I got a new chair. Ooh, ooh. Spin a chair. Ooh.
Oh, it's fancy. Ah.
Well, James didn't like the fact that I took our dining room chair.
Yeah.
So he went and bought a chair.
That's
cute. So my plan worked.
Not the plan worked.
Yeah.
I want one of those crisscross chairs from.
Ah, from the TikTok shop.
But it doesn't have wheels.
Yeah.
I need wheels.
This one has wheels. I can't crisscross applesauce, but I have seen that. Mm-hmm. And I've seen that the only negative side of that chair is that it doesn't have wheels.
But I feel like if my feet aren't on the ground, I won't like wheel it around, but I still want the ability.
You could push off furniture.
Yeah, but I still want, because I wanted it for my classroom, really, but.
Oh.
But I don't really move around because the setup of my classroom, it doesn't really flow with that. And then I was thinking about getting one from here, but I never really sit here unless we're like recording. So I don't know. I think it would be
That's true.
A waste of money, but I'm feeling very impulsy. So I don't know.
There you go. Do it.
Yeah, I might. Who knows?
You could put it in your bathroom and do your makeup though, you know,
yeah.
If you ever didn't want to stand.
But I don't know if it raises that high because I have that thing with all my
makeup. Your counter. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think that would work. I need like a separate vanity and I don't do my makeup enough to like do that. Like,
true.
It's a rare occasion that you see me in makeup. I'm probably not bringing any down this weekend. Probably not.
There you go. It's fine.
Bare face.
You do. You'll still be beautiful.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We just celebrated Ashley's birthday. So pew, 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 pew.
Yes, she's old.
Yes.
She's.
I love it.
Yeah, 34.
You're not old.
I'm so old.
Not old.
I'm 34, actually, mentally, probably like 75. 100%.
The calendar says I'm 34, but I'm like 82.
Yeah, 100%. My body hurts every day when I get out of bed. By the end of the day, I'm like hobbling everywhere. I'm like, this is this is life. This is what it's gonna be.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
And I hear it only gets worse.
It does. It does. Because if this is what's happening at 34, child, pray for me.
You're gonna be shrinking.
Someone who did I just see? And they were like, you're shrinking. You're shorter. And I'm just like,
thank you.
Everything's
That's a great compliment.
Wonderful. Because if I'm shrinking, that means the weight's gonna be more. So everything's fine. Moral story is everything's fine.
It is. You need to get one of those like back posture things that you like tighten and it makes you like have good posture.
I don't have very good follow through. So I would get that with the intention that I would wear it every day. And after like 2 days of having to put it on and crank it up or whatever, I'd be like, this is dumb. Skylar, wear it.
Here you go, Skylar.
Here, have fun. Have at it.
Have fun with this new toy.
You know, and fix it. Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've wanted one. But, like, I just saw a meme right before we started recording, and it was the girl off the Polar Express when she's like this. And it's, like, me 9 to 5, but wondering why my back hurts all the time.
Yeah, it's so accurate. Like, it's so accurate.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
They did that girl so wrong in that movie.
They really did. She's so
scary. They did
scary.
Her so dirty.
She's so scary.
They did her so dirty.
But the one girl who dresses up like her on TikTok, she was, like, she played, the Mariah Carey, it's time. And she like took off her little thing and was like, I was like, oh god, girl, she looked just like her. Just like her. I'm like, girl,
you need to fix that.
Yes,
you need the posture thing.
Like, you couldn't do that girl hair. Her face looked creepy. Like, she looked like
it did.
She just looked like she was like out to get you. Like, she just,
her posture was like her shoulders were touching her knees.
I'm gonna need a remake. Expeditiously.
It was rough. It was
not
rough.
A good time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we are almost in December. So I guess we have 1 week of November left by the time you guys hear this episode. Yeah. So like, was Thanksgiving great? Wonderful? Are you warming up Mariah Carey? Did you warm up Mariah Carey in November? Like, what? How do you do Christmas?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
You know how I do Christmas.
Yeah.
Christmas.
But if you want to do Christmas, go hang out with Whitney.
Oh, 100%. I don't ever want to do Christmas things. I function really well under chaos, which is why I'm a procrastinator. Mm-hmm. So my Christmas tree will not come out until Twinkle brings it. She usually brings the tree, our elf. And she brings all the Christmas spirit. Twinkle yeah. is the real MVP around this house around Christmas time.
I really like your, I really like what Twinkle does around your house. She's very creative.
You know, Twinkle is probably the only spark that sparks something in this area right here around Christmas time.
Mm-hmm. It makes your heart grow three sizes bigger.
I don't know if it's three. It might be 0.5.
Okay.
It might be 0.5, but the girls truly enjoy Twinkle and the girls enjoy Christmas. So I try and be less grinchy for them.
Yeah. I mean, but as adults, we've learned that the Grinch didn't hate Christmas. He hated people, which is understandable.
That part.
So, I mean, the Grinch's little cave's looking more and more like homey to me.
You know what I'm saying? If I wasn't so afraid of getting murdered, I'd probably live on a farm. A big farm with nobody near
me. I don't know
why
you have to get murdered on a farm, but okay.
Well, I feel I just have a, like, places like that. I feel like if, hypothetically, if I was to be murdered, nobody would find me. I ain't got no neighbors. They, like, down the street, up the corner, down the block. They're far away.
That's very true.
So I feel like I need closeness just in case I get murdered, but far enough away that's, like, leave me alone, you know?
Yeah.
I
feel you. I feel you. So as Ashley finds the star student for the week, I do want to give a little plug for me and Ash. We were guests on Jess Smith's podcast, and she was also our guest a few episodes ago. If you didn't see that episode on YouTube, it was our first release for YouTube, and it was a teacher happy hour case, and so you need to go back and listen to it. She is from The Bored Teacher on TikTok. She also has a very big following on TikTok, but we were also on her podcast recently, probably the same week this episode is airing. Yeah. Her episode is being released as well, and it is the Hot Mess Teacher Express. Mm-hmm. So if you want some tea that we don't normally disclose on here, then maybe you should go over there and listen.
You know,
and yeah. You
know, it was a good time.
Yeah.
It was a very
I was in a lot of pain, but
Brooke was. She was in pain.
Yeah.
You know, I was going through a hard week, you know.
It
was a lot happening, but you know, we pushed through as we always do.
We did.
Very resilient over here. But I can't wait to see the final product because it was.
I know. I'm excited.
Yeah. I'm also kind of nervous. I'm not going front, but you know.
Hey, it's out there now.
It's fine. I mean, just go listen to it.
It's okay.
Just go listen.
Yeah, go listen to it.
You know. But our estudiante estrella for this week is Señorita Anderson.
I love it, Señorita. Mama used to call me Señorita Anderson.
What? What was that?
I don't know. I liked it. You're not the only one that can make jingles around here.
You know, you were absolutely right. She said, Serena. I was like, okay, rookie. Okay. That girl said, Senorita. Okay. So, Senorita Anderson's review is titled Cinco Estrellas. And for all of you who don't know, that means five stars, clearly. So it's a five-star review. Period. And Señorita Anderson states, love, love, love your podcast. I listen every day on my way to work. 25 minutes flies by when I feel like I'm chatting with friends instead of listening to a podcast. I even use some of your phrases / jingles with my students. I've been listening since the beginning. Congratulations on 100 episodes and many more to come.
Whoop, whoop. Yeah. Oh, I love it.
That was nice.
I love it.
That was nice. That was cute.
Yeah.
Wow. From the beginning? So you was listening when we was...
In the closet.
We was in the closet. Our audio was not this.
We didn't have John. Uh-oh. We didn't have YouTube.
We didn't have a lot of things. We just had each other. We had each other. Yes, sure did.
We did. Yeah.
Yeah, but Senorita Anderson, I thank you so much for your review. This gold star's for you. Bing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it right there.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. All right, guys, buckle up. Mm-hmm. Like, click, clack, buckle it up. Like, safety belt, turn on the airbags.
Oh, wow.
The whole nine yards. Okay.
A lot of safety.
Yeah. Mm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Sit down. Shut up. The murder is about to begin.
Ahora.
All right. Trigger warnings for this episode. And... I don't even know if there's enough to go around. Mental illness, mentions of self-harm, mentions of eating disorder, murder, torture after the fact of murder, body mutilation. Mm. And yeah, so that's a lot.
Yeah, that's hefty, hefty, hefty. Yeah.
It is. It is. So the overview for this case is as follows. On April 14, 2013, a horrific incident unfolded in the Davis, California residence of Oliver Chip Northup Jr. and his wife, Claudia Maupin. They were subjected to torture, murder, and disfigurement by the then 15-year-old Daniel William Marsh. Marsh had a troubling record of exhibiting antisocial and violent tendencies. Diagnosed as a psychopath, he harbored disturbing fantasies of inflicting pain and death upon others, aspiring to become a serial killer himself. The notoriety of these gruesome murders had a significant influence on the ongoing policy discussions surrounding the sentencing of juvenile offenders.
Wow.
So let's get into it. Yeah. And I'm going to pull an Ashley today, and I'm going to start with the murder.
Okay.
Yeah. Here, you know, learning from the best. So, on the evening of April 13th, 2013, Marsh, who had been battling homicidal thoughts for years, reached a breaking point and decided to turn his dark fantasies into a reality. In the early hours of April 14th, he left his mother's residence and roamed the streets of Davis, California, searching for a house with accessible windows and doors. Eventually, he stumbled upon the home of Maupin and Northup. These individuals resided just two houses away from his father's place. Marsh punctured the window screen, intruded into the residence, and proceeded to the couple's bedroom, where he found them asleep. He violently stabbed both Maupin and Northup, inflicting a brutal attack that left Northup with 61 stab wounds and Maupin with 67 stab wounds. After the heinous murders, Marsh engaged in gruesome acts of dissection, evisceration, and mutilation of the victims' bodies. The discovery of the couple's lifeless bodies occurred the following day. However, it wasn't until June that Marsh would be apprehended. Despite his meticulous planning and the fact he had left no trace of DNA, fingerprints, shoe prints, or any other incriminating evidence at the crime scene, Marsh's undoing came when he boasted about the murders to his friend, which led to becoming a prime suspect, and Marsh's friend immediately called 911 saying the following.
Can this be anonymous?
What are you reporting?
Double homicide that happened at April.
You're reporting that, or you have information regarding that?
I have information regarding that.
What are you calling to report, sir?
The double homicide that happened in April this year.
What can you tell me about that?
Everything, actually. Daniel Marsh.
Daniel Marsh.
Yeah, Daniel Marsh or Dan Marsh. He cut open the stomach of both the people, and he put a phone in the woman and a cup in the guy. The reason why I want to remain anonymous is because if my mom, if my mom finds out, she will send me to military school.
He said, I could tell you everything.
So honestly. That's
Everything, actually.
And he can. And we're going to get into details about it. But, like, yeah, his friend was like, actually, I know everything.
I know all the things.
What do you want to know, sir?
What do you need? Because signed, sealed, delivered.
Yeah.
Here you go.
Better yet, you ask me the questions.
I got you.
Yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm. So following his arrest, Marsh confessed to the crimes during an interrogation, revealing that the heinous acts had brought him a prolonged sense of, quote, pure happiness. Yeah.
Okay.
In September 2014, Marsh was convicted of the murders and was also declared mentally sane. And we're going to get into all of more details as we break down this case. So in 2013, though, a Senate Bill 260 was passed by the California State Legislature allowing juvenile defenders, like Marsh, to seek parole after serving 20 or 25 years of their sentence. As a result of this law, Marsh became eligible for parole after completing 25 years of his life sentence. In 2016, Proposition 57 was approved by California voters, making it mandatory for juvenile court judges to determine whether juvenile offenders should be tried in juvenile court or as adults. Now, Marsh was tried as an adult in adult court at the age of 17 years old. He committed these crimes at 15 years old. In 2018, Marsh's conviction was conditionally reversed under Proposition 57, leading to a transfer hearing to decide his placement in either a juvenile or adult justice system. Now, although the juvenile court judge initially decided to keep Marsh in the adult criminal justice system, a subsequent law, Senate Bill 1391, signed by the governor, Jerry Brown, in 2018, barred juveniles under 16 from being prosecuted in adult court. So basically, why am I telling you all this? Well, I'm telling you all of this because all of these bills, they would like contradict each other constantly. And Marsh is now using all of them against the court. So they're he's kind of like using their own word against them, trying to get out. He's trying to find a loophole. Critics of the 1391 bill claimed it conflicted with Proposition 57 bill, but the California Supreme Court ruled that the 1391 bill did not conflict with the Proposition 57 bill. Marsh, however, argues that the 1391 bill should retroactively apply to his case. So here he is trying to use all these different bills against the court system. On August 18th, 2021, so very recently, oral arguments were presented before the Third District Court of Appeal if Marsh were to be placed in the juvenile justice system. Now, he would have been released upon turning 25 had he been tried and convicted as a juvenile, which means if they overturn his sentence and place it under the juvenile system, he could walk away free because he's now over the age of 25.
But he's crazy.
Oh, we don't, you don't even know the half of it. Yeah. Luckily, in September, 1 month later, the appeal was dismissed by the Third District Court. And Marsh did not get to use these bills against the judicial system.
Okay.
And he still remains in prison.
Very good, because that's where he needs to be.
And I wish that the case was over. I wish it was, oh, okay, there you go, guys. Here you go. But that's just what he did, and that's not even in detail. So let's go back. Let's break this down. Let's go back to who were our victims. So we have Oliver Chip Jennings Northup Jr., which, what a name. Yeah. He was born in Grand Island, Nebraska on April 26, 1925. Oh. He served in the United States Navy during World War II and later became a prominent attorney, earning his undergraduate degree from UCLA and his other degree from UC Berkeley School of Law. He continued his legal career until his passing at the age of 87 years old. Additionally, Northup was elected to the Woodland School Board and held various roles such as city attorney for Woodland Winners and YOLO. I don't know what any of those are, but that's what research said. As well as being the president of the Woodland Chamber of Commerce and the Woodland Rotary Club, which I do know what those are.
Okay.
I know what a Chamber of Commerce is.
Yeah.
My mother-in-law's involved in one, I think.
Okay.
She's involved in something. He was also a musician for the Puta. I think that's a bad word in Spanish.
Sure is. Sure is.
That's not what he's involved in, guys. I got cussing. That wrong. Mm-mm. Yep. Puta. P-U-T-A-H.
Puta.
Puta. That sounds like a band name. Puta. He was also a musician for the Puta Creek Crawdads.
Crawdads. Isn't that a book with a crawdaddy singing, something like that?
Yep. And a movie. Okay. Yeah. It's a good one, too. He was even one of the founding members of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Davis.
He's doing a lot.
So he was a... Exactly. He's a very well-rounded man.
Wow.
Yeah. It was at that church where Northup met Claudia Maureen Maupin, and they tied the knot in 1996. Maupin was born on May 15th of 1936 and served as a pastoral associate at the Davis Unitarian Church and was actively involved in local theater.
Okay.
So you got a musician.
And a thespian.
And a thespian. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I love that.
That's a nice little duo.
She was involved in her church and her theater up until her passing at 76 years old.
Why is he attacking these old people?
It was
Yeah, because he was just trying to find access. But still, like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good people. Granted, don't kill nobody. Don't break it to nobody else. Kill nobody.
Don't kill nobody.
They were good people.
Yeah. I mean, like, thespians, part of the crawdads, starting churches.
Yeah, that's just like.
Being on school boards.
Just like what they say on, I can't remember which podcast, but like, don't sleep with your windows open. Like, don't. I live on the second floor. I still don't sleep with my windows open. I understand the rules.
You ain't getting me.
I can't do it.
You're not getting me.
I won't do it.
No. Yeah. The couple together made a beautiful blended family. Maupin had 3 children and Northup had 6 children, along with 2 stepchildren from a previous marriage. Their blended family consisted of 11 children total, 14 grandchildren, and 8 great-grandchildren. Their lives were full and they were taken away far too soon.
Yes, that is a lot of children.
Do you know how Christmas would look at that household?
Everybody would get 1 present.
One.
With this salary, 1 gift.
And it's probably from the Dollar Tree.
You're not getting nothing from Santa, because guess who it is? Ho, ho, ho. It's me.
Yup. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yup. Now let's get into who took their lives. That would be Daniel William Marsh, the person with a criminal record, is presently serving a 25 to life sentence for the killings of Claudia Maupin and Oliver Northup. Marsh is currently confined at the Richard J. Donovan Correction Facility in San Diego. Before committing these heinous acts, Marsh had a long history of engaging in violent and antisocial activities, along with grappling with severe mental health issues that, if you were to ask him, he would place blame on his...
mother.
Kindergarten teacher.
I said mom.
That took a turn.
Hey, a lot of kids be blaming the parents. So that was just my first time, you know. But, you know, 100%. That's my second answer, is the teachers, because everything is our fault. Mm.
Yeah.
And kindergarten.
Marsh was died.
What is your kindergarten teacher? You just singing songs and learning colors and numbers. And doing basic math.
We'll get into it. Yeah. Be prepared. Marsh was diagnosed as a psychopath and said to have been nurturing homicidal fantasies since the tender age of 10 years old, harboring ambitions of becoming a serial killer himself.
Why is that your goals and aspirations?
Oh, yeah. I was just saying that, like, imagine being at school and everybody's like, I want to be a firefighter. I want to be a policeman. I want to be a teacher. I want to be a serial killer.
I mean,
like,
to play, I don't want to say devil's advocate. When I was younger, not like young, but I used to play like Call of Duty and Halo a lot. So at like one point, I really wanted
Grand Theft Auto.
I played that too. Yep, yep. At one point, I wanted to be an assassin. I was like, I could do it.
Okay, but like an assassin is like a contracted killer. Yeah. Like, you know, you could be like, you'd still be killing people, but like you could work for like the CIA.
Yeah, I could.
But like he just wanna be
but he just wanna kill people for fun. Like I don't wanna do wanna do that. Like I just was like, ooh, I'm a good shot on the game. And I just thought that would equate to real life. I mean, who know? Actually, I went to Alabama and I was shooting guns and I did a pretty good job. So who knows?
You did. You really did. You missed your calling.
There's still time. Who's gonna suspect me?
You're right. You actually have a very good point.
Ain't nobody gonna think about it. This fine young tenderoni killing people. What? An assassin?
She's over here at Starbucks? No, not her.
She don't kill people.
No.
How do you get an assassin school? What I got to do?
CIA?
Y'all listening? FBI agent? This is, send me the links.
Yep. Slide into our DMs. So from 1997 to 2010, Marsh's life story unfolded. Born on May 14th, 1997, his journey took a significant turn in 2008 when he gained local recognition at the age of 10 years old. His recognition came from his heroic act of administering CPR to save his father, who had suffered a heart attack while they were riding down the road. As his father was suffering the heart attack, Marsh pounded on his father's chest multiple times until his father regained consciousness. Oh. This stirred up a lot of media attention, and they praised Marsh for being a hero. They interviewed him. They asked how it felt. He was even given some, like, heroic citizen award.
I could see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I wonder, like, how he felt because, like, you said at the age of 10, he like wanted to kill people. And now he's being glorified for saving someone's life. So like,
well,
what did that do to him?
One podcast said that it was because of all this attention that it caused trauma. And like having to experience this traumatic event with his dad nearly dying. And he was the one that was there and like had to save him. And then all of a sudden he's thrust into all this media attention. One podcast was saying like it could have altered his brain chemistry a little bit.
Wow. Cause he was famous, but not for what he wanted to be famous for. Like, actually quite the opposite. So that might screw you up a little bit. Yeah. I can see that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it was also that same year, Marsh's family was thrust into turmoil as his parents' marriage crumbled. And they divorced due to his mother's affair with Marsh's former female kindergarten teacher.
That'll do it.
Yep.
That'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you knew that man was married.
You did.
You knew that man was married. They came to parent-teacher conferences together. You knew they was wifed up. Mm-hmm. And you gonna have an affair, girlfriend? Mm.
And mama, you also knew that was your son's teacher. Like, you knew that that couldn't have been a good idea.
Wait, the mom was sleeping with the teacher?
Yeah.
The girl?
Yeah.
Oh. I thought it was a dad.
So now your mom is having an affair with your kindergartner teacher. So not only are you dealing with infidelity, but now you're like, my mom's a lesbian.
Wow. Or at least bisexual.
Bisexual, no. Yeah.
Wow.
That'll do it.
And then you saved your dad's life. And then this is what she, he is not liking this at all. He's not enjoying himself. Wow. Mm-mm.
Yeah, so now that we understand where the kindergarten teacher comes into play.
I thought she like maybe, he maybe had a situation like me because my kindergarten teacher, from what I can remember, she was very mean. I did not like school. And one of the reasons I became a teacher was to not be like her. But I just remember her putting me in a corner. And I didn't like that.
Mm.
No one puts Ashley in a corner.
Nope. was just about to say that.
No one puts Ashley in the corner. So I didn't like that. But yeah, she was, I thought it was like that, but you know, that mine is nothing compared to what you going through, my friend.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, not my friend, because you're not my friend, sir.
No.
But.
Mm-mm. But you couldn't have predicted that scenario. I did not. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And it was during this time period that Marsh was unraveling and his disturbing thoughts of violence first emerged. At the age of 10, fueled by anger towards the woman he believed had caused his parents' separation, he began harboring thoughts of harming her, whether by slitting her throat or strangling her.
As a 10-year-old?
Yep. 10 years old.
Was he like, what was his stature, if you will?
Oh, we're going to get into that too. But he was small.
Okay. I'm like, yes, strangling
he was
people?
Small. Like, mm-hmm. But his friend that ended up calling 911, they were friends at this time. So they kind of grew up together. They were really close. And his friend even said, like, I engaged in these conversations with him. We hated her. I hated this woman because my friend hated this woman. And if my friend hates him now, I got beef with her. And so he was like, but I didn't think anything of it. I really just thought he was working through some issues.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
His dark fantasies evolved to dreams of taking people's lives around the age of 11. It was also at 11 that he finally confided in a therapist about his disturbing desires and his intention to act upon them. This revelation led to a diagnosis of adjustment disorder with a depressed mood. So in the seventh grade, he escalated to making threats of physical harm on himself and on others. Seeking help, Marsh started sessions with a David Bessa, a clinical social worker, in May of 2010. The intake form noted Marsh's struggles with nightmares, temper outbursts, and general aversion to people. In August of 2010, Marsh was prescribed Prozac, his first antidepressant, which he was recommended a daily dose of 1 to 2 capsules in the quantities of 100 milligrams. Your standard dose. Now, between the years of 2010 and 2013, Marsh underwent a troubling transformation during his teenage years. He began experimenting with alcohol and marijuana while frequently switching between his parents' homes until the age of 14 years old. It is worth noting that his father bought a home in the same neighborhood as his mother in order to keep the family unit close.
That's nice.
Yeah, man. The man got cheated on.
And he still.
He suffered a heart attack. His son had a bang on his chest. And,
he's still just being, you know, for the family. You know, that's a good man, Savannah. That's a good man, Savannah.
Yeah. But it was also at this point that his father had to kick him out of the house due to his excessive use of alcohol and his constant intoxication and marijuana
use. How old is he again?
While his... He is, I'm glad you asked, 14. Always drunk and high.
At 14?
Yeah. His friend said in an interview that they would get drunk and high at least 4 days a week together at 14 years old.
14?
Mm-hmm.
I was playing sports.
I was still playing Barbies, I think.
That's like, I was doing schoolwork.
Yeah.
I don't think this guy knew what any of that stuff was.
I had a shirt that said Skate Eighters. Like, yeah, you get it?
Skate Eighters.
Yeah. I was not thinking about marijuana and alcohol. You
know, Long Island iced teas and stuff.
I know.
What?
I know. Yeah. But it is worth noting that his dad had to kick him out, right? But his mother remained unaware of his substance abuse, according to my research. And I find this very odd because it's like, dad bought a house that's right down the street. He's going back and forth between his parents' house. Like, are they just not communicating? I don't know. I don't know how his mother didn't know, but according to research, she didn't know.
That's interesting.
Very interesting. Anyways, in October of 2011, Marsh developed anorexia, an eating disorder along with an unhealthy gym obsession, as in working out to the absolute extreme. And this is where his friendship with the the boy who called 911 earlier when we discussed. This is when their friendship fell apart. His friend was still into video games and hanging out and just being a teenage boy. And you have Marsh, who he was begging to eat a cracker, and Marsh would not eat. And then he started going to the gym. His friend was like, yeah, I'm not into that.
Me either.
And they drifted apart. Yeah.
Wow.
Yes. This led him to a placement in an intensive outpatient program for treatment the following month, November of 2011. By this time, his weight had plummeted to a mere 93 pounds as a boy that was between the ages of 14 and 15 years old.
Oh my gosh, he is hungry.
That's how much my thigh weighs.
I feel like that's what my arm weighs.
I mean, 93 pounds.
Yeah. That's nothing.
No, I could blow him over.
Child, I don't remember the last time I was 93 pounds.
Me either.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Marsh's struggle with an eating disorder led to his hospitalization at Berkeley Hospital from December 29th, 2011, all the way to January 25th of 2012. Now, throughout this period, Marsh's medication was adjusted multiple times, and we know how your body can react when you have a change in medicine. Transitioning from Celexa to Lexapro and then back to Prozac. He was also prescribed Abilify, which is an antipsychotic due to feelings of depression and out-of-body experiences occurring 4 to 5 times a week while hospitalized. So needless to say, Marsh was a walking pharmacy.
Yeah, and I just wonder how all these meds interact with each other.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, you're literally putting him on Prozac, monitoring him. You're like, oh, that's not working. Let's switch it to Zoloft. Like, I thought you had to like come off of that stuff.
Yeah, I thought it was like, let's find the right dose, not just let's change it completely. I mean, granted, I'm not a doctor. I don't know.
Me neither.
I could totally be telling y'all the wrong thing. I don't know. It just seems a little much.
Yeah.
Especially when he's combating anorexia as well. Like,
right.
Gotta figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, needless to say, Marsh was really going through it, but by all accounts, his family and even his friends were super supportive, and they wanted to see Marsh get better, and they wanted to see him overcome this obstacle in his life. Now, over time, Marsh's violent thoughts grew more intense and were not seeming to get any better. At the age of 14, his dreams of harming others, which had begun at the age of 10, became even more frequent. In mid-December of 2012, he confided in a school counselor about his homicidal fantasies, resulting in the involvement of the police and his involuntary hospitalization due to the threat he posed to himself and others. And just snaps for that counselor because, you know, good for you. Yep, you were. Mm-hmm. Good job. During this same time, his medication was switched again to Zoloft with Suracel. I'm going to go with that, Suracel.
Never heard that one.
Now, Suracel treats schizophrenia and bipolar disorder, which he doesn't have a diagnosis of yet. So why are we treating him with that medication? I don't know.
You know how some medications are for something, but they also help other things. Like maybe it's that type of situation.
You're right. You're right.
Because isn't like Viagra for like, not only for like erectile dysfunction, like doesn't it like, I feel like I heard somewhere that it helps with something else as well. Maybe I'm making this up. I don't really know. Yeah. I don't know where I'm getting this from. Or maybe I'm confusing it with another popular, I don't know. But I feel like some medications, like they may be mainly for like that, but they also help treat.
So it's like me taking this, like I have a high blood pressure pill that I take, but I take it for acne.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Something like that. Mm-hmm. Oh. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Yeah. So in early 2013, Marsh began taking also Wellbutrin, which is used to, I have heard of that one. Wellbutrin, which is used to treat depression. And again, more of a walking pharmacy, as they could not find the combination best suited for him. In January of 2013, he disclosed his homicidal ideations again, but this time regarding school peers, to a school psychologist, stating that he had full confidence in his ability to harm these certain individuals that he considered his peers and classmates.
Now, he's openly going to tell people about this?
Yes, he's telling school counselors and therapists.
So is he telling them because he wants help, or is he telling them just because he wants to tell? Do we know?
I feel as though he was seeking help. I really do. And like that first, the first counselor, she put him in a hospital, you know, so he could be monitored. And a lot of them do call the cops that he tells these things to, which they're legally obligated to do. But I can't imagine that he thinks that, because he's a very smart kid. Like, so I can't imagine that he thinks they would keep this secret. So the only thing I can think of, if I know they're going to legally report me because they have to, then obviously I'm doing this so that I can maybe go back to a hospital or get attention or want help or something like that.
Okay, I was just curious because I'm like, sir, but also, I mean, I know that when you have diagnosis and you're working on your getting your dosage right, it's not like you're in solitary confinement until they figure that out. So like, I get it that he's like out and still going to school and still doing his regular things, but also he's talking about harming people.
Yeah, classmates.
And himself at times.
Which he already is harming himself. He's anorexic.
So at this point, it's just like, why is it he in some type of inpatient where, because it seems pretty serious to me. Like if you're actively telling a counselor like, hey, you know, I feel like killing people. I think I would do a good job doing it. And, you know, maybe I'll even try to unalive myself here. And you know what I mean? Like, I would be like, okay, like.
And says it so emotional.
You know what I mean? I would be like, okay, like, y'all gonna get him or, because this is above my pay grade and my knowledge, okay? I went to school for teaching. I don't know how to help this correctly.
Yeah.
So y'all gonna have to take him somewhere. Because then if he's still coming to school and you telling him that he's telling you that he's thinking about killing them and that he's still coming around them every day.
Yep.
That's a liability.
It sure is.
So that's strange. Okay.
Yep.
That's different.
Now, this particular incident, a police officer was called to the school and it was determined that Marsh did not present an immediate danger and no further action was taken when it came to this particular incident.
Really like that.
Yeah. However, shortly after, Marsh described in gruesome detail his desire to torture people by peeling the skin from their hands and cutting off their eyelids during a meeting with a school counselor. Now, bless this counselor's heart, because good God, if a teacher called me and said, hey, Daniel, Marsh wants to come see you again, I'd be like, I'm done. Quit. Yeah, I'm out of here.
Especially if nothing's being done. Like, I'm doing my job. You know what I mean? I'm calling the necessary powers that be, and y'all not... I can't stick around for this because this is a liability waiting to happen and my name will not be attached to this.
Right. Mm-hmm. It could be me, Jesus. It could not be me.
Mm-mm.
Nope. So in this meeting with the counselor, he also admitted that these graphic fantasies were just the tip of the iceberg and that he had given up trying to resist them at this point. Now, these statements were not reported to authorities because there was no specific intent or potential victim. So he identified no one when he made these claims, and that does not legally bind the counselor to report it.
I don't really agree, because the fact that you have no one in mind means that everybody can get it.
I can get it.
You can get it. The cafeteria worker can get it. The custodian can get it. Like, the secretary can get, like, the nurse can get, like, anybody can get it. So at that point, you need a report because you don't know who he's going after. He could just see you and be like, oh, you got blonde hair. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
But he used words like people, and he did not say any distinct group of people or any one person. So it did not bind her to legally
report
it. But
that's even more scary. Like, people, that's everybody.
I'm with you.
And then for you to say, like, you know what? I'm not going to deny these feelings anymore. Like, when? Today?
Yeah.
Next week? Like, we need to figure this out because, sir, you can't be coming around here, all these children and adults and staff and...
Yep. Mm-mm. Mm-hmm. So Marsh's homicidal thoughts persisted on, and he constantly contemplated how to harm others whenever he looked at someone. And we will even see this in action when we listen to his interrogation with an investigator. Marsh even fantasized about a schoolyard massacre and aspired to become a serial killer, very much like Jeffrey Dahmer or Ted Bundy.
He tried to eat people too?
I don't know. Yeah. Marsh started discussing torturing and killing random people more openly with his friends and girlfriend and began creating. He did have a girlfriend. Yes, he did.
How did.
Go ahead. I already knew what you were going to say.
Go ahead. I'm just.
Oh, yep. He even began creating violent artwork in his art class at school, depicting gruesome acts of disturbing details. Friends recalled that he frequently spoke about killing people and planned to plead insanity if he was ever caught for murder one day. Yeah. He even devised a detailed written plan to kill his girlfriend's ex-boyfriend and displayed a keen interest in notorious serial killers like I said, Ted Bundy, Jeffrey Dahmer, and John Wayne Gacy.
Mm-hmm. See, that's where you take your true crime obsession a little too far. I enjoy
true
crime.
Yes, you do.
I enjoy true crime, but I don't idolize these people. I don't want to be them. I don't want to copycat their stuff, but you out here like reading the playbooks, like talking about, I want to be like him when I grow up. He's not getting paid. That's not a sustainable job, sir. How you going?
That's
crazy.
Yep.
I'm just still stuck on the fact that he had a girlfriend. I don't understand it.
And his best friend introduced her. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she just cool. Like, oh, he talking about killing people again.
Yeah. Well, they were, I will say this, and I did not put this in the episode because I just didn't find a place that it was relevant. But since Ashley's bringing up the girlfriend part, she did like later testify, like they had become sexually active with each other. And she said that it became very much like
BDSM?
BDSM. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Dang.
And they're like 14 and 15 years old.
That's unhealthy.
Very unhealthy.
That's unhealthy at that age.
Imagine her, like, she's traumatized.
Yes. That he was probably think about killing you.
Yeah.
While y'all was doing things.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-mm. So in 2012, Marsh developed a morbid preoccupation with bestgore.com, a website featuring gore porn and amateur videos of real-life violent incidences. Alongside his fascination with such content, he engaged in destructive acts, including setting fires and inflicting cruelty on animals, which, as we all know, this is where it all starts.
Sure does.
And when those acts no longer bring them pleasure, guess where they go to next?
People.
Yelp. Mm-hmm. Mm. His acts of animal cruelty extended to killing cats, as one friend witnessed him strangling a cat in the middle of the street, with Marsh confessing that he did it out of hatred for the animal alone. He stated, quote, "I hated that cat."
What'd that cat do to you?
With no remorse or emotion.
That's a stray cat. And for you to just...
Yep.
A little cat?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then remember the friend that we keep bringing up?
Yeah.
Marsh also inquired about killing that friend's dog to the friend.
Was like, hey, can I kill your dog?
Yeah.
You're not coming over anymore.
You're done.
You don't need to come here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What did Fido do to you?
Mm-hmm. Leave him alone.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
The audacity, yeah, though, to be like, hey, you know, I know we're friends. Can I kill your dog? Like, what? I mean, we know, yeah, there's a lot going on up here for him. So
we do, but know, still, but, like, can you not act somewhat normal? Like, yeah, that's like, just.
I mean, but he says he wasn't trying to hold it back no more. So maybe he was just letting it fly. Like, you know what? I got a girlfriend this far. Might as well just keep this train going. You know, I don't know.
Yeah. Wonder if my friend will let me kill his dog.
You miss 100% of the shots you don't take. So I might as well ask him.
I mean, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
Crazy.
Disturbingly enough, friends of Marsha's recalled that Marsha's mood appeared to improve following the murders of Northup and Maupin. And he was even recognized as student of the month at school and on the way to making the AB honor roll after the murders.
Now you becoming a genius after you murder people.
He said it gave him a euphoric feeling that he had never experienced.
Ah.
Now.
And people didn't put that stuff together. Like,
you know.
They weren't like, this happened. And this boy always talking about killing somebody.
And now he making A's and B's. And a student of the month.
And probably not going to that guidance counselor like, yeah, I want to kill people because he already did it.
Mm. Yep. Mm-mm. Yep. Wow. Now, this behavior did not last very long because his disturbing behaviors then sparked back up. And he was actually expelled from school in May of 2013 after he was found to be in possession of a knife while at school. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, Marsh, with an IQ of 114, struggled with various mental challenges, as we have spoken about that in great detail. A psychiatrist diagnosed him with severe depression and anxiety, along with an emotional disturbance disorder. Forensic psychologist and expert in psychopathy, Matthew Logan, characterized Marsh as a psychopath, scoring a 35.8 out of 40 on the psychopathy checklist, which I didn't even know was a thing.
I want to find it.
I want to take that quiz.
Imagine Brooke getting a 40 out of 40. I'm like, teachers who talk, crime done.
Jason would be like, I knew your ass was crazy.
He really would. Oh, we gotta find it and put on the story. We gotta find it.
Oh my gosh. I didn't even know there was a test.
Like, not that. Take this test to figure out. You know how you do those Facebook quizzes?
Yes.
Like, take this quiz to figure out who your true love is. Take this test to figure out if you're a psychopath.
Yeah, exactly. Click.
Immediate.
Yeah.
Let me see.
Yeah. Oh, curious. Like, what? Oh. When I read that, I was like, what? There's a test for this?
I mean, because then when you think about it, some people are diagnosed as a psychopath and there has to be something to, but you never think of it like that. It's just like, ah, you crazy, you psychopath. You know what I mean? Like, it's never like, oh, well. And also, how many of those checks deem you as a psychopath? Like, if it's out of 40 points and I get 10, am I good? Am I okay?
Yeah. Or should I be getting
am I a
zero?
Mild psychopath? Like,
am I just stalker level, like, psychopath?
Are there levels to it? I just need to know. If I check one, am I doomed? Like, I need to know the rules of this quiz because I'm gonna take it.
I'm absolutely gonna take this quiz. Yes, 100%.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So Marsh scored a 35.8 out of 40.
That's
so
a lot.
And he was deemed a psychopath.
Yeah, because he was up there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, James Rockup.
Rockup.
James, I'm sorry if I messed your name up, but James, another psychologist, suggested that Marsh was a sexual sadist who committed murders for self-gratification.
Mm.
Now, he was the only one that truly believed that there was a sexual component to who Marsh was, because neurologist and neuropsychiatrist Kathleen disagreed with these assessments, arguing that there was no evidence of antisocial or sexual sadism in Marsh. And I mean, from all of my research, everything he did, none of it had a sexual component.
Yeah, I would agree.
Besides that weird, gruesome porn that he watched. But that website had other things on it, like violent acts against people. And it was other things outside of the porn component. So I don't think he, again, not a doctor, don't know. But I, just from my research, I didn't see that sexual component
in
the way that
you.
Marsh was.
I agree with you. I feel like there would have been more at the crime scene. He would have like done things there. Yeah.
Yes.
And those things
he didn't.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like there would have been more like violent stuff with the girlfriend. You know what I mean? And I just, I don't see it.
Yeah. Marsh, instead, she claimed that he was manic depressive disorder, dissociative disorder, depersonalization, and anorexia disorder. Now, beyond his mental health issues and violent tendencies, Marsh appeared emotionally distant from both of his parents. A family friend noted his lack of emotional response even when all of this was taking place and his mother was crying profusely in front of him. And he had no emotion. Now, people don't know if this had anything to do with his mother's decline in her own life, because she had a neurological illness that was basically killing her. And again, that could just also be a trigger. His mom left his dad for his kindergarten teacher, and now she's sick and it's killing her. And my dad kicked me out of the house because he don't like me drinking and smoking weed.
Yeah. You
just don't know.
Yeah. So maybe he was just off put by his parents altogether, you know?
Yep.
Never know.
Now, according to Marsh's confession, on the night of April 13th, 2013, he reached a breaking point after years of harboring homicidal desires. At the age of 15 years old, Marsh made a chilling decision to act on his violent fantasies and take a life. He meticulously prepared for this heinous act, taking measures to avoid leaving any trace of his presence, which he had learned from TV and the internet. He concealed his footprints by taping his shoes with duct tape, wore gloves to prevent leaving fingerprints or DNA evidence, and wore all black attire along with a black face mask to be undetected visibly. He armed himself with a 6-inch buck knife and headed out of his home. In the early hours of April 14th, between 2 a.m. and 3 a.m., he left his mother's home and roamed the streets of Davis, California, in search of an opportunity, but with no particular victim in mind. According to Marsh's statements in his confession, he scouted between 40 to 50 residences. He looked into 40 to 50 homes.
That's scary.
Terrifying.
Because, like, at what point are you like, it's not in the cards? Like, at what point are you like, I hear you. I'm going to go home. You know what I mean? Like, there was none of that for you.
40 to 50. You're like, I'm going to get one.
Like, that's a lot of... and. I don't know how the neighborhood is set up, if these houses are close by, if they're farther apart. I mean, I imagine it's California. They're pretty close together, but still, that's a lot of ground to cover.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I agree. So he was looking for open doors or open windows. And finally, he discovered an open window at the Maupin and Northup's condominium, just two doors away from his father's house. Yeah.
I wonder if he tried his dad's house. I would be curious to know.
That's a good question.
Because, like, what are you doing in that? I know your mom and your dad live in the same area, but.
Right.
And also curious, you were so mad at your mom and the teacher. Not saying, glad you didn't, but also,
right.
You know, that's where my mind is
but
going.
But I'm honestly surprised. I'm surprised you didn't, because we see so many cases like that rather than like this.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because it seemed like your anger was stemmed partially towards them. So
correct.
They would be on the receiving end of said rage.
Correct.
You know?
Yes.
But maybe he thought that because his mom was already like being killed by this.
Dying.
You know, maybe. I don't know. Just thinking out loud. It's fine. Go ahead.
That's very interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So trigger warning, I am about to get into the murder. So if this is too gruesome for you, please use the skip ahead feature now. So Marsh cut through the window screen, entered the living room, and waited until he heard snoring from the master bedroom. He then followed the sounds to find Maupin and Northup asleep. For approximately 10 minutes, Marsh stood over the sleeping couple, deliberating on how to carry out his gruesome plan. During his confession, he described feeling a mix of nerves, excitement, and exhilaration. It was at this moment that Maupin woke up, saw Marsh, and began to scream. Mm. Marsh responded by stabbing her in the torso. Mm. As she cried out for help and begged him to stop, Marsh admitted that her pleas only fueled his aggression. Mm. Even after they were deceased, he continued to inflict more wounds, stating that, quote, it just felt right. Maupin sustained 74 wounds, including 67 stab wounds, and lost a tooth due to one of those stab wounds. Northup endured 65 separate wounds from his head all the way to his legs, with 61 of them being stab wounds. In total, Marsh inflicted over 128 stab wounds on his victims in their own home. That's some serious rage. Because I've never stabbed anybody, but like it seems like that would be pretty hard to do.
Yeah. I just, but like over and over, like I don't like things like that. Like,
yeah.
I'm just imagining like the, and then like if you're hitting things and there's no way I'm going to be able to do that, let alone 100 times. But then you talk about it just felt right. What is right about this?
Yep.
Because even when I cut my meat, I'd be like, ugh. Mm-hmm. And I have to put a little bit more effort because a little, like that. And for you just like, yank, 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 over and over again, like, you not tired, sir? Like.
Yeah.
Oh.
Like you said, you didn't think to, like, maybe stop.
But it felt right.
Hmm.
Oh.
Oh, but just wait. To make it even worse, Marsh didn't stop there and went beyond murder, mutilating the lifeless bodies of his victims. He dissected their bodies, performed experiments on them, and even removed their organs. He attempted to extract Maupin's eye and removed fat from her leg and torso, while cutting open Northup's forehead out of curiosity. Additionally, he inserted a cell phone into Maupin's abdomen and a drinking glass into Northup's abdomen, stating during interrogation that he did so just to torment those investigating the murders. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you don't
let that marinate.
You don't ever need to come out.
Mm-hmm.
You don't ever need to come out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you just did that just because? Just thought it was your cool party trick or something? Like, ooh, a phone here.
You just wanted,
a glass here.
You wanted to torture the people investigating
that is
the scene.
Horrible.
Yeah. Mm. Marsh confessed that committing these murders gave him an indescribable feeling of... Excuse you. An indescribable feeling of pleasure heightened when the victims were conscious and resisted.
Then.
Yeah.
Then why did you continue?
Mm-hmm.
Once they were gone.
Marsh kept gruesome souvenirs from the crime, including the murder weapon and the bloody clothing that he was wearing. He also expressed plans to commit further murders, wandering the streets in search of new victims armed with a baseball bat, with the intention of avoiding any association with the prior stabbing murders. So he's going to switch his weapon of choice so that you couldn't make the connection between the two. Which, by the way, he was already looking for other victims when he got caught.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Too smart for your own good. Gotta watch out for them.
Yeah. So on the morning of April 14th, Maupin and Northup were noticeably absent from the church, causing concern among their family members. Mary, Northup's daughter, attempted to reach them by phone, but her calls went unanswered, and this was very unlike her. Adding to the concern, Northup failed to appear at a scheduled performance with his local folk band, which again was very out of character. Attempting to check on the couple, Northup's son, Robert, and one of his grandsons visited their home as a wellness check of sorts. No. After finding the home empty, they assumed Maupin and Northup were just away and lost track of the day and time. However, later that evening, Maupin's daughter, Laura, and the police decided to investigate further when they still had not heard from the couple. Laura rang the doorbell without success, and upon circling the back, she discovered an open window with a slashed screen. Mm. Peering through the bedroom window, she was met with the unsettling sight of bloodstains and the lifeless bodies of her mother and stepfather. This allowed the police to force entry, leading to the grim discovery of Maupin and Northup. Wow. Despite the efforts of investigators, which included 25 FBI agents and local police and helpful citizens, the murders proved hard to solve in terms of physical evidence. Remember, Marsh left no traces of DNA, fingerprints, or footprints. Wow. His capture only occurred when he recklessly boasted about the killings to his friends. And on April 14th, one day after the murders, Marsh proudly confided in a close friend, the one who called 911, admitting his involvement in the murders. The following day, he retold his confession during lunch with others and later shared gruesome details with his unsuspecting girlfriend at the time.
Wait, you said a day after is when he started talking? Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Despite her initial disbelief, Marsh continued to boast about the crime, describing it as a euphoric experience. On April 16th, he told yet another friend, showcasing the murder weapon and other incriminating evidence. Fearful of Marsh, the friend and girlfriend hesitated to report the confessions initially, as they did not want to make Marsh angry and become his next victim.
That's understandable.
Eventually, the friend, alarmed by Marsh carrying the knife to school that day, informed the school, leading to Marsh's suspension and ultimate arrest. The relationship between Marsh and his girlfriend soured at this time, leading to their breakup on June 4th. With intimidation as the reason for the breakup, and obviously out of fear of Marsh. Mm-hmm. Several weeks later, Marsh heightened that fear by entering his ex-girlfriend's home through a dog door around midnight in an attempt to scare her and threaten her.
That's why I ain't gonna get no dog door. Them things.
Yep.
Raccoons, creatures, mm-hmm. and people come through there. But those little holes are not that big. So
he was 93 pounds.
And then also doing all that while you're anorexic. And probably, like, no strength.
Yep.
That's
crazy. Mm. Well, obviously, this terrified her, and she confided in Marsh's friend, who in turn approached Marsh's father about the murders, but faced backlash as Marsh's father did not want to believe that his son was capable of such things. Fearing Marsh's potential for harm, the friend took the matter to the police, explaining that Marsh had threatened to kill again and very soon. Mm. Following extensive questioning, Marsh was arrested on June 17th.
Wow.
On June 17th, Marsh found himself in a police interrogation room escorted by a high school resource officer.
Whoop, whoop.
Facing questions from Detective Ariel Pineda? Nope. P-I-N-E-D-A?
Pineda?
Yep, Pineda? Sure. Ariel Pineda. Pineda. I was thinking Pineda. Ariel Pineda and FBI Special Agent Chris Campion. Marsh initially denied any connection to the gruesome murders, attempting to talk his way out of the situation. Tears actually began to stream down his face as he pleaded with Campion to believe his innocence.
That was an act.
Yup.
That was a whole entire act.
Yup. But after 3 hours and 38 minutes of intense questioning, Marsh finally broke down and admitted guilt, saying, quote, that night I couldn't take it anymore. I had to do it. I lost control. He also stated, quote, I went into their bedroom. I opened the door and then I just kind of stood there watching them asleep for a few minutes. My body was trembling. I was nervous, but excited and exhilarated. I was actually going to do it. I was there. It was finally happening.
Mm-hmm. What are you at, Disneyland?
Like, what? Did you see Buzz Lightyear for the first time?
Oh, come on now.
In explicit detail, Marsh recounted breaking into the victim's home and the disturbing sequence of events that followed. Marsh confessed to murdering the couple and mutilating their bodies, providing gruesome specifics about his actions. During the chilling confession, he expressed a disturbing sense of joy and satisfaction that he got from these acts alone, emphasizing the positive feelings that lingered for weeks afterwards. He said, quote, "It was pure happiness and adrenaline and dopamine, just all of it rushing over me. And I'm not going to lie, it felt amazing. The most exhilarating, enjoyable feeling I've ever felt." Yep. Okay. Marsh's lack of empathy for others became evident during the interrogation as he admitted to harboring thoughts of killing almost everyone he encountered. When asked about how he would kill the interrogating agent, Campion, with Campion saying the following to Marsh, quote, "You mentioned that pretty much everybody you meet, you have thoughts about killing them and how you would kill them. So how would you kill me?" Marsh coldly listed various brutal methods without a hint of personal animosity. He said, quote, "Just a lot of ways, I guess. Choking you to death with your tie would be one. Beating your face into that mirror back there until it broke, and then using the glass to cut your arteries, gouging out your eyes, and just smashing your face into the wall, but nothing personal." He said that to the interrogating FBI agent. But nothing personal.
Oh, it got some balls on him. Got some balls on him saying that to somebody. And now I would bash your face into the mirror until it broke, and then I would use it to cut your arteries.
Mm-hmm. But like, you got it. Like, you have to hear the interrogation. Like, when Campion asked it, it's like Marsh was like, "Yeah, so I would do this." Like, he genuinely had actually thought about all those things.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah. Mm-mm. He asserted that he lacked sympathy and empathy for others, which was very clear. And following his detailed confession, Marsh directed investigators to his mother's garage, claiming it held, quote, "all the evidence you need." A search was indeed done, and it uncovered the bloody clothing worn during the murders and the knife that was carefully preserved by Marsh as a souvenir.
Wow.
Marsh was charged with 2 counts of first-degree murder with special enhancements, which is, I've never heard of that before until this case, so I thought that was pretty interesting. So he was charged with 2 counts of first-degree murder with special enhancements for intentionally killing more than one person, demonstrating exceptional depravity in the killings, lying in wait to kill, and inflicting torture in a commission of the murders.
Interesting.
Marsh, though, pleaded not guilty, as they all do.
Insanity.
But Marsh later changed his plea from not guilty to not guilty by reason of
insanity.
Insanity. Exactly what he told his friends what he was going to do.
That's what he said.
Yeah. The defense even believed that they had found a psychiatrist that would agree with them, but when Matthew Sawyer met Marsh, he ended up testifying that Marsh was mentally ill, but very much sane. So it kind of backfired on the defense.
Wow.
Yep. Marsh's trial began on September 2nd, 2014, when Marsh was 17 years old. He was being tried as an adult in adult court. The jury makeup was that of 8 women and 4 men, where they thought that the 8 women would have sympathy for Marsh.
Child, if I was on there, I wouldn't. Sure wouldn't.
No.
Mm-mm. Sure wouldn't.
Nope. The trial itself lasted 5 weeks, and the trial consisted of multiple witnesses, which included Marsh's ex-girlfriend and former therapist. The jury deliberated for 2 hours before they reached a verdict of guilty on both counts of first-degree murder and all the special circumstances. Mm-hmm. And although Marsh was tried as an adult, he was not eligible for the death penalty or life without parole given his age. The maximum sentence that Marsh faced was 52 years to life. He was, in fact, given a 52-year sentence, which was 25 years for both murder charges plus 2 years for the special enhancement charges.
Okay.
The murders attracted national attention and were even featured on 48 Hours. However, the weirdest part to me is that on May 16th of 2018, while in prison, a YouTube video of Marsh giving a TED Talk was uploaded to the internet.
Like a real TED Talk.
Like a real one.
Like TED Talk. Mm-hmm. Like TED Talk. Like, thank you for coming to my TED mm-hmm. Talk.
Yeah.
What was he talking about?
Glad you asked. In particular, this talk, which was entitled, not entitled, it was titled, Embracing Our Humanity. Marsh spoke of all of his alleged trauma he had gone through, and he officially declared himself reformed, and he believed he deserved another chance in society. He even said, quote, I came to realize that there are no such things as evil people in this world, only damaged people.
I came to realize that there are no such things as evil people in this world, only damaged people. Embrace our humanity.
Yeah.
Now, the damaged people that I know are like, as in damaged by Danity Kane, you know, damaged.
Yeah.
But, mm-hmm. but yours, you, mm-hmm. sir, are far.
You're evil.
And I feel like you have the intellect to be able mm-hmm. to make this sound believable.
Right.
And play
people. That's the scary part.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I feel like some people probably believe him, like, yeah, he's great. Mm-hmm. That's another Paris Lee yeah. Bennett right there.
Yep.
That's what that is right there.
But obviously this did not go over well, and the family got a hold of TED Talk and YouTube, and it was immediately taken down within 2 days of its surfacing.
I was about to say, because I need to go and find it, because the fact that TED Talk even approved of this is just...
I'm a little disappointed in TED Talk.
Yeah, because they have some really nice TED Talks, you know, the ones that they always show you in the beginning of the year with the teacher, mm-hmm. and she's like, yep. oh, B, I don't remember what she says, but I've seen it so many times. You know, you got to be their cheerleader, whatever she says. Great speech. I've just seen mm-hmm. it far too many times in my 9 years of teaching.
Yeah. But, oh, the woman that says children don't learn from people they don't like.
Yes. Wonderful. That later. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That part. Mm-hmm. But when you have things like that, and then you come out with this man who violently mm-hmm. murdered these people, talked yeah. about murdering the FBI agent that was interrogating him. Mm-hmm. and was actively looking for more victims.
Yeah.
That's
giving a TED Talk on who's evil and who's not, and how people aren't actually evil. They're just damaged. Sir, I'm damaged, and I am not out killing people.
I know that's right. I know that's right. Know that's Come right.
Come on.
Like.
Yeah.
Well,
that just really, that was
now I know crazy. I can get on TED Talk. I don't know what I'm going to talk about, but yeah. I'm going to talk about something. I'm going to be like, and when they're like, well, what you want to talk about? Well, you had a whole murderer on here, so I think I deserve to say what I need to say.
Yep.
Because mm-hmm. I'm sane. I'm not a psychopath.
Yep. I'm not sitting in prison.
You know?
Yep.
Hmm.
Yep.
Hmm.
Well, Marsh does still remain in prison at Richard J. Donovan Correctional Facility in San Diego and is actually eligible for parole after serving 25 years of his life sentence. If they grant it, he will be 42 years old at the time of his possible release.
That is really scary.
Wild.
The fact that you even got the option is crazy to me. That's
yep.
I don't believe it one bit. Even mm-hmm. if you were reformed, sir, like, let's say hypothetically that this is all real, I still wouldn't believe you. That's just me, myself, personally. I got trust issues.
Yep.
And all that? Nah.
Yeah. I would really need to see some serious documentation for me to believe, even partially, that you're reformed.
But even if I was to see documentation, I know that you got this up here.
Right.
And I know this That's is true. Above average up here. So above yep. average people
and you can
things,
manipulate.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-mm.
Yep.
Mm-mm.
Yep.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. So that is the Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs case of Daniel Marsh.
That was cuckoo.
And due to time constraints, I left a lot of details out. So I highly encourage you guys to go research this case on your own. There's a ton of resources out there. The episode of 48 Hours was a great resource for me. There's also several YouTubes about this, and there are several amazing articles written from the perspective of his friend and ex-girlfriend, which are pretty interesting as well.
That's kind
of
cool. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
That
was a lot to unpack.
I don't really, I'm really at a loss for words here. That was a lot to just,
It was. Mm-hmm. It was. It was. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks.
You're welcome. I don't know what I taught. I don't know what I taught you guys today, but.
You told us that people crazy.
Don't murder.
Yeah.
Don't commit murder.
Yeah, just don't be. Yeah. Don't be a murderer.
Yeah, don't do that.
Just don't do it. It's not very wise for you.
Nope.
All right. Well, all right. Well, we're in an hour and 32. Look at us. Okay. Well, as always, the bell don't dismiss you.
We do.
So we will see you next time. Bye.
Bye.